Welcome back to the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I'm very excited for you to listen to this episode because I just got off the phone with Inner Circle member Gabriella, and as you will very soon find out, she is nothing short of tremendous. She is just about 60 pounds down, and over the course of her weight loss, she has learned an unbelievable amount. She's developed a healthier relationship with food, a healthier relationship with exercise, and she talks a lot about her struggles with food, with exercise, with being overly restrictive, being overly meticulous, and how she's worked to overcome all of that to now have a very healthier relationship with food. So I hope you enjoy the episode, and if you want to join the Inner Circle, you can do that at www.sfinnercircle.com. With that said, let's get into it. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. So good to talk to you. What's going on?
Oh, man. It's a surprise day off. I didn't realize today was Canadian Thanksgiving, so I was just expecting to fully go back to normal work. And then my partner was like, by the way, we have tomorrow off. It's a three-day weekend. I'm like, oh, that's great.
That's huge. That's amazing. Well, happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Are you celebrating at all or no?
No, we don't really celebrate Thanksgiving. My family's European, so don't really celebrate any Thanksgiving. So for us, it's just a random extra day off. And if you get a dinner with the family, then great.
Sweet. I love it. Well, listen, I'm really excited to be able to hop on and chat with you. And for me, I'm excited to get to know you better. And I want you to know this is 100% your time. So if there's anything I can help you with or any questions you have, like, that's what I'm here for. So whatever you want to chat about, please, like, what, I'm open to anything and everything.
That sounds great. I wrote down a couple of points of like things that might be interesting to talk about, but I didn't have anything particularly scheduled. You know, it was mostly just a nice opportunity to talk to you, a nice opportunity to talk about Inner Circle and just the awesome stuff that it does. I've fallen into the trap of many fitness gurus and many Instagram influencers and, you know, many rapid detox ways and do this for 14 days and you'll lose fat and do this HIIT cardio jumping workout for 30 days and you'll lose 60 pounds guaranteed. And it's been a really nice breath of fresh air to have something so down to earth.
Yeah.
And so like genuinely helpful instead of just this kind of predatory mindset of I'll get your money and then I'll worry about the rest later.
That makes me super happy. Can I ask, what made you decide to join the Inner Circle?
So this was a complete accident. I mean, not the actual, you know, you do have to put in your credit card numbers. So that part was not an accident. But I was watching some sort of YouTube video and I don't remember what the topic of the video was. I think it was fitness related in some way. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a video that was particularly about fitness. I think fitness had just come up in the video. And one of the top pinned comments on that video that I just happened to look at was, hey, if you want more of that type of fitness talk instead of the regular Instagram things, maybe these two people, maybe you should follow them on Instagram, go see what they have to say. And it was Jordan Syatt and I think his name is James, but his name escapes me right now. James Smith, the Not a Diet Coach and Not a Life Coach books. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So I said, okay, sure. Why not? I follow enough fitness Instagrammers and influencers. I might as well. So I followed you and James on Instagram. And then I started seeing these posts on my feed. Like I didn't particularly look at what you had on Instagram. I just clicked follow and then went like, okay, I'm done. So I just started seeing my feed pop up, you know, in between the detox teas and the other things. Every once in a while, there would be something like, hey, you can't fuck this up. It's okay if you eat a slice of pizza. You're not going to die. You're not going to implode. You're not going to gain 60 pounds. It's fine. Just eat the pizza, get back on track the next day. And I was thinking, huh, that's new. And it was just this kind of slow introduction into the kind of more down to earth, more kind to yourself way of doing fitness, this kind of like it's for yourself and it's a life journey instead of you need to punish yourself for 60 days and then you'll lose the weight that you want to lose. And there were a lot of, you know, talks about the inner circle. There were people commenting saying, hey, since I joined the inner circle, I'm doing so much better. And I was on the fence about it. I was thinking maybe, maybe not. And you put up a call for people to join that 30-day calorie cycling challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw that and I thought, no, I'm never doing that again. Because to me, it was a binge and restrict cycle. Mm. That's what it seemed like to me.
Yep.
Because I'd done so much of that in the past, it seemed like, oh, it's an excuse. You get to eat as much as you want one day, but then you just restrict the next day. And it's called calorie cycling. It was a fancy way of doing binging mm-hmm. for me. And I thought, you know what? This guy has so much good content. It can't be that. So I sent a DM on Instagram and I'm thinking, this guy has so many followers. There's no way he's ever going to read this or reply to it. But I just asked, like, what's this about? Because this feels like binging to me. And I don't know if that's what you're really putting out there. But I want to know more about this calorie cycling challenge. And you answered me within like 5 minutes, something crazy like that, with really kind encouragement and like, you know, genuine care about what I was talking about. And I thought, okay, this guy's a good one. Signed up for the inner circle that day.
I love that. And have you tried calorie cycling? How's it gone?
I have. I've tried it for about 40 days. So I gave it a good long try and I realized it's not for me.
Perfect.
In the beginning, I thought I was doing great.
Yep.
It was easy. I was getting to eat a lot of food on the heavier calorie days. And
yep.
I put those on the strength training days because I get hungrier on those days. So I figured that's a good way to arrange it. And I found myself being ultra restrictive with the low days and constantly worrying about them. I was planning my low days like 4 or 5 days in advance. Like, is it okay if I have some cottage cheese? An extra 10 grams of cottage cheese might take away from my dinner. So I might not get to eat my whole dinner. And it was just a lot of that, you know, restricting kind of past coming back. And I thought, you know what? I've tried it for a while. It's gone well. I've made progress, but maybe it's not for me. So maybe I'll try a straight deficit for a while. So I've been in a straight deficit for another 30-ish, 40 days now, and I like it a lot better.
That makes me very happy to hear. I absolutely love that because, you know, you tried it. You gave it a fair shot. And then you also said, you know what, this isn't for me, and you're going to do something different. So that, for me, is the biggest win of all, because in many levels, one, because you were actually consistent with it, you tried it, open-minded enough to at least give it a shot. And on the other hand, objective enough to say, hey, this might work for some people, but not for me. And that's okay. And for me, that's just such, it says a lot about you and your character and your determination to improve. So I absolutely love that. And how has the straight deficit, just eating the same number of calories every day, been? Do you like that better? Do you feel like that's better for you?
I do feel it's a lot better for me. It stops the thoughts of like, if I just put a few more calories away for tomorrow, then tomorrow I can have the thing I really want. And the inner circle has been really helpful with that because there's a lot of people that struggle with this. You know, I'm not the only one in the world to ever think that restricting food is hard. So there's been a lot of kind people that have had a lot of great feedback on what to try, maybe how to try to change mindset. For me, the straight deficit seems to be the way to go. It's easier to have a general body, keep it within a 200 calorie range. So I have like a low and a high range, which is also something I learned from the inner circle. I would give myself these really strict calorie targets before, and I would have to hit them within like 5 to 10 calories, which if you think about it is a little nuts.
It's crazy.
There's always discrepancies on how much weight the package says it has versus how much weight you're
Correct.
Actually eating. You know, you might take like an extra little sliver of chicken from the pot and not notice the extra weight. You can't be within 10 calories of a goal.
Correct.
But I was so obsessed with hitting that target that even just this idea of give yourself a range. I saw your YouTube video on the how to do a calorie counting and I thought, oh, this one's new. I should try this too. So a straight deficit with a range seems to be the way to go. It takes a lot of anxiety away from eating, which is great.
That's perfect. And it sounds to me like you have a very healthy relationship with food and with calorie tracking. I mean, it's, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like in the past you struggled with being very restrictive and being too meticulous. And now you're at a point where you're like, I can't live like that. It's not that. And you're trying to, you're in along the journey of trying to find a way that works best for you. And everything that you're saying and everything that you're doing to me is indicative of someone who has a very healthy, very good idea of what a relation of a healthy relationship with food looks like for them. And I'm very impressed.
I've improved a lot, and I'm proud of myself for that, and I'm very grateful for it too. I definitely have days where it's bad. Mm-hmm. And I think if you struggle with eating for quite a long time, there's always going to be times where it comes back and things that remind you of it, things that are making it much harder. But I've made more progress in the kind of 3-ish months that I've been in the inner circle than the past, 5 years of working on fitness journeys on my own. In terms of relationship with food in the past, I broke down crying in a gym once in the gym showers because I couldn't eat my shampoo.
Oh, no.
So I had been restricting food quite a bit because I thought if I don't eat a lot of food, I'll lose weight. You know, it's the calorie deficit. That's the way to go. But I was also pushing myself in the gym to an absurd degree because I thought more is better. If, you know, if 15 minutes of warm up is good before you do your strength training, then I should do 2 hours of warm up, you know, just full running on the treadmill, and then I'll do my strength training and that'll be better. And I knew it was bad in the sense that I could feel my own body not taking it, but I didn't have the kind of like mental presence to be kind to myself, to tell myself it's okay to take a break, it's okay to take a rest, it's okay to not go full ham on absolutely everything. And I was so hungry at that point for like months and months, just starving, constantly thinking about food. And I had forgotten my regular shampoo at home, so I'd brought a little travel size that I hadn't had before into the gym showers with me, and it was a mango scented one, and it smelled so much like mango, the actual food, that I sat there and I started crying because I couldn't eat the shampoo. Oh, I was so goodness. Hungry.
And
so there you go, girl change? That tried to eat her shampoo.
Was that a big moment? Like, did things change then? Or like, what happened after that?
You would think it was a wake-up call. And I continued to push myself for another like 6 months before I finally broke. I think that's one big thing that I learned from listening to a lot of other stories in the inner circle, a lot of other people going through really hard times like that, is that it's so easy to see that it's bad when it's somebody else. Yeah. It's so easy to look at somebody else struggling and have this response that's full of kindness and wanting to help. And it's very hard to have that response with yourself. It takes a lot of practice and training, and I'm getting better.
It's so interesting how even if it was your worst, if you saw your worst enemy struggling, crying, really upset over something, you'd probably be like, you know what? I'm going to help them. Like, you know, I'm going to try and comfort them. But for yourself, it can be so difficult to show yourself even an iota of that same grace and kindness and compassion. I think you're right. It's a skill and it takes time. And I think arguably most of all, it takes objectivity, because I think it's very difficult to even recognize that we all generally know like the phrase like, yeah, we're our own harshest critic. We all hear that, but do we really internalize it? Do we really objectively view it? I think being able to almost come out of yourself and look down almost at the conversation you're having with yourself and objectively say, wow, why would I talk to myself like that? Why would I say such a thing to myself? I would literally never say that. I wouldn't even think that about another human, never mind say it to them, but I'm just saying it to myself over and over again. So to be objectively aware of it, I think is the most important part, because without that objectivity and without the awareness, you can't take steps forward. You can't actually work to improve. So again, very impressed with you, and I'm super proud, and I'm very happy to hear that you're doing so well. It makes me so happy.
Thank you. I'm also happy that I'm doing well. I don't think anybody that goes through, you know, issues with food or issues around exercise or restricting food, I don't think anybody's really happy in that spot, even correct, when they think they're doing it great or they're doing it for themselves. It's always a struggle, and you're just convincing yourself that the struggle is worth it, or that you're not good enough in some way, and so you should continue to struggle.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So I know you said you wrote some questions down. Did you want to go over any of those?
I had a few, yeah. They're not exactly. I mean, they're a little bit scatterbrained in a sense.
I'm very scatterbrained, so it works well with me.
One of the ones that came up very recently was from watching you do the jiu-jitsu competition. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. The fact that you
got to compete is huge. So it's impressive to see you go through that.
I appreciate that.
I'm excited for the one in November. So there were kind of two questions that kind of came up from the Instagram stories with you going through the competition, preparing for it, doing your cut. One was more about your workouts and one was more about your nutrition. So when you were doing the Instagram stories and sharing the workouts that you were doing for the jiu-jitsu competition, they were really focused on the things that you would need in that competition. You know, you were doing the bike sprints because you needed cardio endurance and you needed to be able to go through that full 5 minutes of a fight and not, you know, cough up a lung halfway through because you're tired. You were doing these sandbag shouldering because you need to pick up people and they're full-grown human adults and they weigh a lot of pounds and you need to be able to pick those up. And it just got me thinking about transitioning to more intuitive workouts, but also workouts more focused on the goals that you currently have. Mm. I've been in that lose the weight mentality for a very long time. And even now I'm doing the Inner Circle editions and I'm going through those. I'm discovering a lot of exercises that I've never done before that I like. And it's been really interesting. But it's gotten me thinking, well, what happens when I finish these editions? You know, what do people that have a healthy relationship with exercise, how do they deal with finishing an exercise plan? Where do you go from there? Is there an intuitive way of exercising where you think, okay, these are my goals. Maybe I should do this, or I want to get better at X thing. So I should start incorporating this into my exercise. It was really interesting to see that from the perspective of somebody that's only ever followed exercise plans and exercise plans that have been very generic, you know, do HIIT cardio and do 3 burpees every 10 seconds and then you'll lose weight. So that was kind of the exercise part of it. And with the nutrition part, it was more along the questions about weight cutting. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you about that, but I thought it might be a too long question for the lives that you do on Facebook. I've seen a lot of people cut weight for competitions, but the competitions that I've seen them cut weight for have been exclusively bodybuilding competitions for physique competitors. And the weight cutting that they do is very extreme. And it's not a sustainable thing to do. It's a very harsh, very intense process that they do just before the competition so that they're, you know, as lean and veiny as possible for that part of the competition. So I wanted to ask about how to do weight cutting in a healthy way, because you seem okay. You seem to be doing great. You're happy. You haven't eaten your own arm yet. You haven't eaten your shampoo.
Yeah. Well, let's talk. Do you want to do the exercise first or the nutrition first?
Let's go for the exercise first.
Cool. So, I mean, both great questions, and thank you for being so interested in it. And these are, like, you could only have asked these questions if you were actually really paying attention and watching. So that means a lot to me. So thank you. In terms of exercise, you brought up this term that I actually like. It's intuitive exercise, right? Like sort of just exercising intuitively based on how you feel. And I think in the same way that I think of intuitive eating, that the only way to become a true intuitive eater is to have an education in calories and macros and tracking for a while. You can't just start intuitively eating if you don't have an education. I think the same thing goes for exercise. You can't just intuitively exercise if you don't have a background in what movements to do, what movements you're going to need in order to enhance your performance, in order to feel better, how to do those movements. So I think that's first and foremost. That being said, I never train without a plan, ever. I mean, unless we'll say I'm on vacation and I'm just working out to work out because, like, I want to move and I'm not very regimented with it. But anytime I work out, I'm either following an Inner Circle workout or a workout that I've written or had another coach write for me to help me achieve my goal. Now, there is a term It's sort of a fancy term that was, I think, believed coined in a book called Super Training, which is sort of like the Bible of strength and conditioning. It was written by the late Mel Siff, who is incredible. And basically the term is called cybernetic periodization. And essentially what it means is this. It means that based on how you feel on any given day, you should be able to modify your training to accommodate for how you feel. So we could use the example of maybe you come in one day and your back is aching, but you have deadlifts programmed. Are you just supposed to do deadlifts just because deadlifts are written, or should you modify the program to accommodate for that backache? But it doesn't even have to be purely physical. It could be something mental. Maybe you're going through a divorce, or you were laid off from your job and you're really stressed and you haven't been sleeping. Do you follow the program exactly as written? Like, if you're going through a divorce and you lost your job and having all this stuff, and the program is going to be like a 90-minute session, is that a good idea? Or maybe should you have it, like, bring it down to 25 to 30 minutes because you know that's what the person needs at that point in time? So even when you have a plan, there has to be room for this cybernetic periodization. There has to be room for this accommodation, for this modification. And I don't know if this is answering your question at all, but where I'm going with this is the movements that I have been doing for jiu-jitsu are specifically done because of a performance-related goal. And this is one of the reasons why I'm such a huge advocate of performance as the goal as opposed to aesthetics. It doesn't mean that you can't chase aesthetics. I think aesthetics goals are just as valid as performance-based goals. But I've found that when the goal is performance-related, adherence tends to be better. Enjoyment is significantly better. It's much easier to track performance progress than it is to track in aesthetics progress. Because, again, we're all our own harshest critic. You can't argue with performance improvement. You either squatted more weight or you didn't. If you squatted 5 pounds more, you hit a personal record. You either did 2 more push-ups or you didn't. If you did 2 more push-ups, you're making progress. You either did another chin-up or you did. Like, it's clear. It's objective. You did it or you didn't. With aesthetics-based goals, it's like, oh, like, I'm still not happy with how I look. You know, I still have these ab fat rolls, whatever it is. Like, I still am not as big as I want to be, whatever it is. It's easier to be a harsher critic with yourself when the goal is aesthetics as opposed to performance. So with that in mind, as a coach, I look at the requirements of the performance. I look at what I need in order to perform at my best, right? So I look at the most important components of jiu-jitsu, which is, you know, we have you need a certain level of endurance. You also need specific types of endurance. So you have the endurance that you would need from your heart, from your lungs, from that type of capacity, but also grip strength endurance. So doing things with a towel grip for time, as opposed to, because I could do heavy dumbbell rows, but if I can't hold on to my opponent's uniform with my finger strength, then it doesn't matter how much I can row because my finger strength is really going to be the limiting factor. So I look at what I need for that level of performance and I start modifying my training in order to accommodate for those specific factors. And this is where you can start to be like, okay, so this looks intuitive, but it's actually very strategic and very planned out. So even something like Turkish get-ups, like I was doing today, it's a very intuitive movement. In fact, a Turkish get-up, if you really think about the history of a Turkish getup, before there was any machinery, before there was any way to pick a really heavy object up, this is how someone would get a really heavy object up over their head. You'd start on the ground and you'd have to push it up and then you'd have to stand up in a safe way to get it up overhead. If there isn't no machinery, no nothing, how else were you going to get it up overhead? You can't take a really heavy thing and just pick it up on your shoulder. You have to, like, it's going to be impossible. So you have to figure out ways to maneuver it to get it up. So it's very intuitive movements, very natural movements that we have as humans, but it's also very deliberately planned in advance. So I think it's, to answer your question, I don't know if this is even answering it after this long ramble, there's intuitive components to it, but I think the intuitiveness comes from years of experience. I also think that if we really break it down into the most important part is find something you want to improve performance-wise. That's really sort of the seed of this, the seed of this plant, the seed of this tree is find the goal that you have from a performance perspective, whether it's running a 5K, whether it's doing a handstand, whether it's doing jiu-jitsu, whether it's playing soccer, whether it's doing chin-ups, whatever it is, push-ups could be anything. Find your performance goal. and then structure your quote unquote intuitive movements, intuitive exercise, intuitive workouts based on what it will take you to accomplish that goal. Does that make sense?
It does. And it's a lot of really good insight. You don't really get to see this part of training when you look at social media or you look at coaches on Instagram. They seem to have it all figured out. I'm not saying that you don't after that explanation, but it almost seems like this kind of magic, the same that intuitive eating seems like magic to you when you're very restrictive and very focused on food. It's nice to get a little bit of understanding towards the fact that it's still a planned thing. Yes. It's just not strictly following one plan for the rest of your life. And it's planning around your performance-based goals and around things that you want to achieve, which I think is, it gives a lot of hope, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It gives you hope that you can do it for the rest of your life, if that makes sense. You know, absolutely. I look at some of these exercise plans and they don't seem like something that I want to do for very long. I can tough it out for a month, for 2 months if I need to, but it's much easier to motivate yourself to do something when you're really excited about something that you might get to do.
That's exactly right. And that's why the goal determines the process. And I want to say it again, because that's a very important thing to really understand. The goal determines the process. It's not hard to write a workout program. It's really not, especially from an aesthetics-based perspective, or even we could, because that can be more scientific and more deliberate. We'll say it's not hard to write a workout program from a calorie burn perspective, which is what most people do. Most of the swipe workouts on Instagram are like, hey, here's a quick workout, swipe to do it. It's just like they're just trying to get you to burn as many calories as you can in a brief period of time, which is better than not working out at all. But that whole workout is based on, I'm going to suffer through this and make it as quick as I possibly can because it's not going to be enjoyable and I want to burn as many calories as I can as quickly as I can, as many calories as possible, and then be done. The difference is when that's your goal, you will suffer, and not in a good way. You will dread the workout versus when you have a goal of, hey, by the end of this workout, I want to make sure I'm more accomplished so that I can do more push-ups, so that I can increase my mile time, so I can do a handstand, so I can get better at jujitsu, so I can prepare for this competition, whatever it is. Now all of a sudden your workouts become a challenge and it becomes exciting because you can track your progress. It's not just that one workout in time. It's the culmination of all of your workouts that you can see progress over time that really makes you excited. So it's even at this point in my life, I never go into a workout without knowing what I'm going to do. And I'm always open to modifying it based on how I feel. But I always have a plan for what I'm going to do. And the goal determines what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I think even the flexibility to modify is something that I learned from the inner circle. Something that wasn't really present in my mindset before. You know, I would go in and it's like, yeah, your legs are sore from a 4-hour bike ride. Too bad. It's leg day. Welcome to squats.
Absolutely not. I remember when I first got into fitness and I was reading fitness magazines, and the thing that was exciting to me was the workouts. It's like, what does this guy do? What does he do? Like, I want to look like that. And you look at their workouts, which they probably have never done in their life. It's just in the magazine, whatever it is. But you read it, it's like, okay, so they said an incline dumbbell bench press. So it's like, okay, well, I need an incline dumbbell bench press. Anything less than an incline is not good enough. It's like, God forbid you do a flat bench or a floor press or a single arm press or a push-up or another pressing movement. It's like, it's way less strict than people make it out to be. And it's oftentimes because they think that whatever exercise is programmed is almost like a magical exercise. Like, this is it. This is what needs to be done. It's not like that. There are many ways to accomplish a given goal. There are many exercises, many set and rep schemes, many rest periods. There are many different ways to accomplish the goal. Really, the common factor is, number one, do you enjoy it? And number two, can you do it consistently? And that's really what's going to be the determining factors of your progress. Do you enjoy it and can you do it consistently? And every time I've found people doing things as a way to suffer through it, they can never do it consistently because they don't enjoy it. So they go hand in hand.
Absolutely, you will break at some point.
You will. There's no way not to. And not to mention, like, what a terrible way to live, right? It's like to live as a, and there is the whole argument that life is suffering. We could go down that route, which is like there life is always suffering, but you don't have to suffer through life, if that makes sense, right? Like, in a way, life is suffering, but in a beautiful way, in many different ways, but you don't have to suffer through it. You don't have to suffer your way through everything that you do. You should be able to find ways to enjoy it and to take pride in it and to work your way to improve throughout it. And if what you're doing all the time is causing you to suffer, there's no way you're going to make any meaningful amount of progress over a sustained period of time.
The focus on performance is a huge factor in getting that suffering away from your workouts. Because if you're focusing on performance, things I've learned from the inner circle and the wonderful people within, if you're focusing on a performance goal, there are a lot of things you can do to improve to get that goal. There are a lot of different ways to train for a specific goal. There are different exercises you can do. And if you don't have the equipment for one particular exercise, you can sub it out for something else, or you can modify it and it's going to be fine. Whereas if you chase aesthetic goals, it's very hard to control. I think that's one of the big things I had to learn in getting me away from being so afraid of food and being so obsessed with food and controlling exercise in the gym, was the fact that I can't really control my aesthetics. I can try. I've done a lot in the past. I'm about 60 something pounds down from heavy weight at this point, and still losing and feeling great, which is amazing. But from my heaviest
That's extraordinary.
It doesn't feel like a huge accomplishment sometimes, and you have to kind of stop yourself and realize, like, no, you did a lot.
You've done an extraordinary amount. Huge congratulations.
Thank you. The biggest thing that I'm proud of is not losing the weight. It's the fact that I'm still okay and still doing well and not, you know, eating shampoo. But one of the things that I realized is, like, I was chasing this aesthetic goal and I didn't realize it. I gave myself a weight and I thought, once I get to that weight, I will like myself. And that's an illusion a lot of people fall into.
Amen.
And I got to that weight. I got 15 pounds and then 20 pounds lighter than that weight. And I didn't like myself anymore than I had when I started. And I realized, like, this isn't actually what I'm trying to control. And even just in terms of fat loss, you can't spot reduce. You can't lose belly fat only and keep your butt bigger and whatever else, you know, you might have in terms of an aesthetic goal. My arms are exactly the same size that they've been since the 60-pound heavier weight, but I've changed in a lot of other places. And I can't tell my body, okay, you're going to have to lose that arm fat. It's going to have to get leaner. It's just, it'll happen or it won't. And I have to be okay with that, because my body can do things that it never could before. I spent so long chasing aesthetic goals and pushing myself so hard that I had no energy left for anything, right? Like, when you do a 2-hour intense cardio warm-up so that you can then start your strength training routine, how much strength do you really have left? Not much at all. I could barely pick up 5-pound weights. Those were heavy for me. We have these 20-pound weights at home, these dumbbells. I would have to ask my partner to move them from one room to another if I needed them somewhere else, because I couldn't pick them up. They were just too heavy for me. And I'm doing deadlifts and squats with 60 pounds now. And that might be very low for somebody, but for me, that's huge.
It's incredible. To go from 5 pounds to 60 pounds, are you kidding? That's incredible. It's very interesting. I've found that when people obsessively chase aesthetics-based goals, they oftentimes, number one, never achieve the aesthetic-based goal. They're never happy with how they look, and they actually destroy their performance for the exact same reasons that you just outlined. Because when you obsessively chase aesthetics, oftentimes you'll do way too much in the gym. You'll eat way too little. So, and no matter what happens, you'll never be happy with how you look, which is bad for aesthetics and bad for performance. On the other hand, when you chase performance goals and you feed yourself in order to perform well and you train yourself in order to perform well, you improve your performance, You love your body and what your body can do. You're proud of it. And as a result, you end up loving your body more, how it looks too. So, and this is why, again, I'll never say aesthetics goals are bad or you shouldn't have them. But what I always really try and hammer home is chasing performance and how you perform and how strong you can be and how powerful you can be physically will lead to a better overall aesthetic physique. You'll be more proud of how you look and your performance will radically increase. And that's one thing. No one's ever been discouraged by being able to do more push-ups or by being able to run a longer distance or run faster, or like when your body does something that you've never been able to have it do before, you are always proud. You're always happy. And you can really start to appreciate and respect your body and what it has to offer. But when all you do is obsessively work out in order to burn calories and lose fat, you end up overlooking how incredible your body actually is and what it can actually do, because you're not, that's not your focus. Your focus is on trying to make your body less rather than on trying to make it better.
You absolutely hit the nail on the head with that. It's you cheat yourself out of performance that you could have when you're not eating enough and when you're doing crazy amounts of, well, I wouldn't say unnecessary cardio, because cardio is important for a lot of things and I still do it and very much enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But I don't do 2 hours as a warm-up.
Correct.
I think one of the cool things that I learned through joining the Inner Circle and getting better with strength training, getting better with eating, was that the aesthetic goal that I was chasing, it wasn't a bad goal. It's not a bad thing to have a look in mind that you would like, or think, you know what, I'm a little heavier than I'd like to be. Maybe I should change that. It's absolutely fine. But for me, at least, I couldn't reach that aesthetic goal by focusing on it. I couldn't reach that goal by saying, okay, well, I want to look this way, so I need to work out this much and I need to do this much cardio and then I'll get there. I reached my aesthetic goal by accident, by chasing performance goals. I started strength training because I wanted to be stronger. I want to do a push-up at one point in my life. I think it would be cool. I'm getting very close and I'm very excited about it.
Very close.
And accidentally, I point where I like the way I look. And it's a really interesting thing to happen to you where you just walk past the mirror and go, you know what? That's pretty good right there.
Hell yeah. I love that.
I'm not super lean. I don't have abs showing. You know, I don't have the crazy muscled back or anything that I was chasing on Instagram when I was looking at these aesthetics, but I'm really comfortable where I am, which is a really interesting thing. It's like the performance goal brought me to my aesthetic goal.
That's incredible.
The nutrition had to shape up too for the performance goal to ever come into play. I thought the protein requirements for your calorie counter and your kind of calorie calculator videos and the Inner Circle videos, I thought they were so high, you know, like this is gym bro level protein intake. I don't have huge amounts of muscle. I don't need to eat this much protein. And I started tracking food better with a calculator and a tracker that actually took note of macros, because I would only note down calories beforehand. So I started paying attention to how much protein I was taking in and started trying to hit those targets. I don't every day, but most of the days I do. It's been pretty great. I enjoy the foods that are higher protein. I've found a lot of foods that I like. But one of the hilarious things that I found out by doing this is I was using a similar calorie counter before. So I went back and tracked some of my days from when I was still very obsessive with food. And I thought I was eating great. I thought, you know, I'm hitting the super low calorie number. I'm exercising. I'm doing great. And the amount of protein in grams that I was taking in a day was 6.
No way.
I don't know how. I just got it into my head that lettuce is the way to go. You want to lose weight? You eat lettuce. You eat lettuce for lunch, lettuce for breakfast. You want a snack? Have some lettuce. No dressing, no anything, because that's calories, you know, eat the lettuce.
This is why people have such a bad idea of the word diet, because as soon as you hear the word diet, many people are like, oh, lettuce, right? That's like the word that equates to diet, like diet lettuce. It's like, it doesn't have to be that. So what did you start eating to really increase your protein intake?
So I had to change my diet quite drastically. And I say diet as in the things that I eat on a daily basis, not, you know, the eat four grapefruits and you'll lose weight kind of diet. I had to change it quite drastically because I have some gut issues and some digestive issues. So I was eating primarily plant-based for a long time. And the things that have high protein as plants were things that would upset my stomach. So I would avoid those foods because I didn't want to feel sick. I didn't want stomach pain and other things. So I didn't eat a lot of protein because those things would upset my stomach. So I had to slowly incorporate animal-based foods again and slowly incorporate more and more variety of foods to the point where I found things that I can eat. So, you know, a lot of people have all of these things, including Greek yogurt on the inner circle that they talk about. Seems great. I tried it, can't digest it, can't touch it.
Wow. Okay.
And it's okay. It turns out I can have cottage cheese, and it's also high
Perfect.
protein, and it's delicious, and I love it.
I just had some before we got on. I love that.
I had to try a couple of different protein powders to find the one I like. And it turns out that even the one I like, I barely use because I enjoy protein bars a lot more than I enjoy protein powders. And that's fine. You
I love
do
it.
whatever works for you. I enjoy lean meats and I cook a lot of different things now. And, you know, as much as I ate lettuce in the past because I wanted to lose weight, I love vegetables. They're
Yeah.
great. Like a lot of my meals have still a huge content of veggies and lettuce and salads and roasted veg and whatever. And I enjoy them, but I don't eat them because I think I have to. I eat them because they're things that are tasty and they help me with my goals.
I love that. That's a great distinction. It's like you don't eat them because you have to. You eat them because you enjoy them and they're good for you.
And
That's
you can make a
perfect.
vegetable taste okay. There
You
are
really
ways.
can.
You don't have to eat steamed broccoli if you don't want to.
And not to mention, I think this is really important. Like, salad dressing isn't bad for you. Like, a lot of people are like, what do you put on your salads? I'm like, salad dressing. Like, I really like salad dressing. It's the issue isn't the salad dressing. The issue is, number one, if you're using half a bottle of salad dressing. And then number two is, like, what are you having the rest of your meals? Like, most people, because, you know, I'm a huge fan of one big salad every day, big ass salad every day. It's most people aren't ruining their progress from a big ass salad, from the dressing on their salad. That's usually not what's going on, unless, like, on top of your salad, you're putting multiple bacon cheeseburgers and like every and ice cream on top of your salad. Yeah, then maybe your salad is ruining your day. But otherwise, like, if you're having a big bowl of vegetables with some salad dressing on top and a protein, you're good. Like, there's no reason to overthink that part.
The fear of salad dressing is a real one for a lot of people. It's
Yeah.
like it's unnecessary calories. Kind of. I mean, theoretically, you don't need salad dressing to live. It's not meeting any particular, you know, nutritional content that you're not getting from your other food, but it's also not a huge detriment. Like you can
It's like
whip up some olive oil and some balsamic vinegar, throw it on there with some spices. Great.
I love that. And I do that frequently. It's to me, it's the equivalent of the fear of cream in your coffee. It's like, which is another surprisingly huge fear that especially among people who intermittent fast, which is like, listen, it's fine. I don't personally do it. I used to do it for years, like no inherent benefit to doing it, but if you want to do it, great. But the number of people that I get on a daily basis who are petrified that the cream in their coffee is ruining their fast, or the cream in their coffee is ruining their progress. It's like, take a deep breath. No one ever got fat because of the splash of cream in their coffee. Now, maybe if you're having six large coffees a day with like heavy cream and like half of it is cream, and, well, yeah, then maybe you have an issue. But if you're having one or two coffees with a splash of cream, you're good. It's not a problem.
Absolutely. If it's a unicorn frappuccino from Starbucks and you're having that 3 times a day, sure, maybe.
Correct.
That was something that I was afraid of too. It wasn't something that I was doing because I heard intermittent fasting was good. I just did it intuitively because I thought that was one way that I could control food more. You
Correct.
know, I
Yep.
would skip breakfast, I would skip lunch, I would skip the snack, and I would just eat at the dinner time and then have a little snack in the evening. And I thought, okay, great. So I skipped all these meals. I get more food at dinner. And I would just be ravenous the whole day. And I would be
Exactly.
petrified of having a tiny snack because what if I eat this handful of carrots and hummus? and I don't get to have those calories for dinner. It's like, listen, it's okay. First of all, eat the carrots and hummus, and then you won't be so dizzy that you crash your car on the way home. And exactly. How many calories could there be in those carrots and hummus that it would ruin, quote unquote, your dinner? You're going to be fine.
Correct. Not to mention what tends to happen with people who obsessively intermittent fast is what you just said, which is they'll save their calories for dinner because they want to have a really big dinner. They don't want to go to sleep hungry. The idea of going to sleep hungry is very anxiety producing, and they just want to have one big meal. The issue is the more you save your calories, the more anxiety you build up for that one meal, and the more you end up binging that entire meal. And then, not to mention, aside from just not being able to eat and being able to stay lucid while you're driving your car, is also the social aspect. Like for me, one of the biggest reasons I stopped intermittent fasting, I realized that I was scared to go out to a breakfast with my buddies. It's like, we're all going to go out to breakfast. And I was like, no, I'm intermittent fasting. And then eventually I got to a point where I was like, what is wrong with me? I can't even go enjoy breakfast with my buddies. And I was thinking, like, this was almost a decade ago now, but I was like, one day I want kids and I want to be able to have breakfast with my kids without being like, oh no, you two eat, I'm intermittent fasting. Like, God, like, that's just not the life that I want to live or that I want to promote in any way. And again, if someone does intermittent fasting because it works for them, incredible. But I think it's important to be aware why you're intermittent fasting. Why are you doing 2 hours of cardio? Why are you skipping breakfast and lunch and the snack? Why are we doing this? If you have to go to your why. And if your why is done out of a fear, then it might be time to reevaluate what you're doing and maybe you should change it. I want to answer your question about nutrition because I think that was a good topic. Could you just say it again? Because I candidly, I forget. So if you could you repeat it?
That's all right. I mean, your answer leads into that question very well, because it's this idea of being afraid of food and being afraid of having a little bit too much here and there when you're trying to lose weight. And cutting weight is just, you know, a short term trying to lose a specific amount of weight for a goal, like a competition and making weight. And it was really interesting to see the fact that you were very strict and very, very focused on that goal. You knew you wanted to go to the competition and you knew you had to make weight for this competition. Like, that's great that I need to lose this much weight and I'm on it. But at the same time, you would put up stories on your Instagram of your fiance and you having dinner, and it looked like a great dinner. It looked like a healthy, full dinner. There was vegetables. There was food there. Mm. It wasn't a leaf of lettuce with no salad dressing. And it's so easy to think of weight cutting as only the kind of like aesthetic based weight cutting, the very strict cutting that you see for bodybuilding competitions, because that seems to be very popular on Instagram. Those kind of aesthetic photos get a lot of likes. They get a lot of traffic. So you see them pretty often. And you see weight cutting as, you know, eating only one rice cake with peanut butter the day before the competition and not drinking water and taking diuretics and doing all this crazy stuff. So my question was more along how you've been doing this weight cut, but in a healthy way, in a way that's not driving you crazy, because you're doing great, but you have lost the weight that you said you would lose. Mm-hmm. And it's a really interesting mix of cutting weight, but also doing it in a way that's not crazy unsustainable. And that's not something that's driving you nuts.
Yeah. I mean, it's number one, a great question. And I think it's a really important one. And I'm glad we're going to discuss it. I think one of the questions that I got a lot throughout the cut was, are you worried about it exacerbating previous disordered eating habits that I had from when I was a wrestler, right? Because I would cut weight for wrestling.
Yeah.
But I was talking to several of my buddies from when I was wrestling in high school, and because everybody on my team, all of my friends struggled with binge eating. We just didn't know it was a thing because we all did it together. We would all cut an enormous amount of weight in a very unhealthy way, and then we would all binge eat together after we weighed in, and we would joke about it and it was fun, and like we would all like suffer together. But we were kids. We were 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and we didn't know it was a bad thing until we got to college and we realized, oh, we can't control this and no one else around us is doing this. And I got the question of, are you worried about it exacerbating those issues? And the short answer is no, not at all. And the longer answer is, after having gone through it, I so wish that in high school I knew what I know now in terms of food in terms of quote unquote good and bad foods, and there really being no such thing. I wish I knew. You know, one thing that I've really thought about, especially over after this last weight cut for the competition, is I would love to go into high schools and speak to the students about food, because I think there's so much misinformation in high schools for both young men and for young women. I think there's a lot of fear mongering. There's a lot of societal standards and pressures that are put on them in order to look a certain way that sort of drive them to have very unhealthy behaviors. And I would love to go in there and really, if not educate the kids directly, maybe educate the teachers who will be educating them. Because I remember my wellness teachers, not because they were malicious, just because they didn't know, they perpetuated a lot of the disordered eating habits that went on there. I had zero issues with binge eating. I had zero issues with anything during this past weight cut, because it was so relaxed and so all encompassing. Like, there was nothing that was off limits. There was nothing that I couldn't have. And I think just knowing that there was nothing I can't have, nothing that was off limits, made it very easy and a lot less stressful. Because sort of like we spoke about earlier, people equate the word diet with lettuce. And people say it all the time, like, oh, I don't just want to have like a what's the phrase? Like a rabbit diet, like eat like a rabbit.
Ah, yes, the rabbit
people,
food.
People say that. It's like, I don't want to just have lettuce and carrots. And it's just like, if that's what your diet is, then you're really screwing up. Like, that's not what it's supposed to be. And I think as soon as you tell someone, or even you think to yourself, I can't have XYZ food, well, that's all you want. And now it becomes very restrictive and very limiting. And that's when you create disordered eating habits. So for me, this weight cut was very simple. I won't say it was easy, because there were times, I mean, when you cut calories, you're going to get hungry. It's part of the process. Like, there were times where I was hungry. But for example, one of my snacks that I'd have, or treats that I'd have almost every night, was not a lollipop. It's like an ice cream. What's it called? It's like an ice pop.
Right.
Yeah, an ice pop. It's just like, I remember in high school wrestling, I'd be like, I can't have those. They're full of sugar. But it's like 90 calories. It tastes great. And it's like a great snack that I could have with my fiance, and we watch our shows at night before we go to bed. Other times, like, I think one of the things people overlook is the social aspect and the family aspect of eating. It's like, no one wants to be having dessert and then just be like, well, I can't have anything. Ideally, you're going to find something that you can enjoy as well, something that everyone can be together. Like, I wouldn't want my fiance to be the only one to have dessert, because then she'd feel awkward about it. And she's so supportive. She was like, all like, whatever we can put in the apartment to make sure. I'm like, listen, we're going to keep everything exactly the same. All I'm going to do is just cut my portion sizes a little bit. That'll be it. Like, it's like nothing about us, our relationship, our food is going to change. Just going to cut it down a little bit. And then obviously, like, at night, instead of having a bunch of candy or popcorn, I just had that ice pop. And that was really one of the biggest changes I made in my nutrition, was just, instead of having apple crisp or some ice cream or whatever it was at night, it was just cool. I'm just going to have this ice pop. So instead of having a 350 to 500 calorie dessert, it was a 90 calorie dessert. And that was it. And that was literally one of the biggest changes I made in my nutrition. It wasn't radical. It wasn't crazy. It was just very simple, and it was very logical. And that immediately cut about 300 to 400 calories off of my daily intake. So I think for me, when you look at a lot of the bodybuilding and physique competitors, they cut out all salt. They cut out all like dressings. They cut out all additives. They cut out anything that might add any flavor to whatever it is they're doing. It's just like, it's going to be chicken breast, like cooked, like boiled chicken breast and like steamed broccoli, and it's going to be terrible. And no wonder they gain 20, 30 pounds again right after the competition, because they binge eat like crazy. I think when you eliminate all of your favorite foods from your diet, you're setting yourself up to eventually binge eat and go way off track. Whereas for me, it's like, I didn't eliminate anything. I just reduced how much I was having. No, that was literally it. So it was a very simple cut. There were times in which I was like, oh yeah, I'd really like to have pizza right now, because like in New York, you walk by a pizza place every five steps, and I smelt it all the time. I was like, man, I'd love to have pizza right now. But I reduced how much I was having. And I, over the course from the time I started the mini cut until the time I competed, I lost over 20 pounds. But it was very slow, very sustainable, very enjoyable. Like there really weren't many issues with it. The last couple of weeks were a little more difficult, just because calories were significantly lower. I was training six times a week. It was very, very difficult. But now I'm back on track. I gained 3 to 4 pounds which is like, that's nothing. It's like, I just have more food in my stomach. So I gained about 3 to 4 pounds and I'm back on it and I'll compete again in 5 weeks. And the cool part about the competition in 5 weeks is I didn't regain all the weight that I lost. Like I've gained 3 to 4 pounds. So now I'm starting from a very great place. Now I can enjoy the next 5 weeks significantly more enjoyably and significantly less restrictive than I was before because I've already lost the weight.
I think something huge that you hit on is this idea of no food being off limits or no food being bad. It's very easy to fall into that mindset when you have some sort of strict goal and you convince yourself, I need to get to that goal, whether it's for a weight cut, for a competition, or just for aesthetic-based goals or something else. If you cut out everything, at some point, you're going to go nuts.
That's right.
And at some point, you're just not going to be able to survive off of black coffee and lettuce. I had a lot of foods that I convinced myself I didn't want because I was just cutting them out because I thought they were bad. They're too high calorie and they're going to make me fat, quote unquote. I didn't have ice cream for over 2 years at one point because ice cream is bad. Dessert is bad. You shouldn't have dessert. I have ice cream in my freezer right now. I haven't touched it in about 3 days because there were other treats that I wanted more. And it's a really interesting mind switch to have these things around. And like you said, there is pizza around. And yeah, it'd be great to have it. And if you want to, you absolutely can. But you're going to have to adjust in some other place. And maybe that's just not worth it right now. Maybe pizza tomorrow or maybe pizza next week. And it's a really freeing way to live when things aren't off limit anymore.
I could not possibly agree more. And this is one of the questions that I get all the time is basically sort of, how do you deal with a trigger food that's in your house? And I think the foundation, there are many, this is a very like layered question. It's like an onion,
absolutely,
right? But the foundation of it is understanding what you just said, which is, there's no bad food. You can't, there's nothing that's off limits. Cause as soon as it's off limits, this is when people, they say that they're an all or nothing person. This is when people say, well, I'm either going to eat the whole pizza or no pizza at all. I'm either going to eat all the ice cream in my fridge or none of it at all. I'm either going to have the whole container of peanut butter or none of it. It's like the reason that you do that is because you think you're doing something bad. And as soon as you have one bite or one spoonful or one taste in your mind, you've just told yourself that you screwed up. You told yourself that you're going to get fat anyway. So you might as well eat all of it well past the point of discomfort, well past the point of actually wanting it. You just do it because you think that you screwed up. And you know when you're done eating it, you're going to restrict yourself from it for a very long time thereafter. So you try and get as much in as you can. The all or nothing mindset really comes from this place of you think you screwed up. You think that food is inherently bad. But when you take that out, when you take away this idea or concept that food is bad inherently, that you can't have it, well, now you have literally ignited the flame, ignited that one spark that is the flame of healthy eating, of a healthy relationship with food.
Absolutely. And I think it's also important to touch on the fact that it's hard and it will take time. And there will be a long time where you maybe can't have those foods in the house. You know, maybe they're too stressful, maybe they're still too triggering, and it's okay. You're not doing anything bad by still struggling with certain things. And, you know, you're not going to bench press 500 pounds the first day that you go to the gym and pick up weights. And it's okay to have a gradual increase in strength. It's okay to have a gradual increase in your comfort with food as well. So I have foods around and I'm not, you know, there's still foods I struggle with that I don't keep around, and that's fine. But there are a lot of foods that I can have around and they don't bother me because I can have them whenever I want. I don't need a croissant every day because if I feel like a croissant, I know I can go to the bakery and get a croissant and I'll have it and it's great. And then maybe the next time I feel like it will be 2 weeks later instead of tomorrow. And that's okay too. But it took years to get to the point where I could have a croissant in the house and not necessarily eat it. And I think that's one of the biggest advantages to the inner circle. If anybody's still kind of confused about it or unsure about it, it's that the amount of support that you get and the amount of caring that you get without being like a fake positive in a sense. It's not just like, oh, honey, you're doing great. Do whatever you're doing. It's amazing. You're doing great. It's genuine care. It's support from a place of wanting to see people get better and wanting to see people be happier and stronger. And it's okay to struggle with things. And it's okay to have a hard time with things. It's okay to take a really, really long time to get where you want to go, as long as you make little baby steps and you'll get there eventually.
I just got chills when you said it's okay to struggle with things, because what a powerful statement. If you really think, like, it's okay to struggle. It's very literally the hairs on my arms are standing up. This is something that I've never really heard someone say. And you're going to see me adopt that phrase in my content now. It's a very powerful thing to say if you think about it. It's okay to struggle. It doesn't have to be easy. It's not going to be easy. It's okay to struggle. It's okay to feel like it's not working. That's part of the process. In fact, struggling probably means that you're working to get better. If you're never struggling, you're probably not improving. And I think looking at struggle as a positive as opposed to a negative is a good way to start objectively analyzing how you're talking to yourself. Because it's in those moments in which we're struggling that we are hardest on ourselves. But when you can look at that struggle as a positive rather than a negative, then you can start to speak to yourself as though it's a positive rather than a negative. So I absolutely love that. Gabriella, is there anything else that you'd like to discuss? Any questions that you have, or anything that you want? I'm here for you.
I think we've hit on a lot of great topics. So I'm really happy with how this went. We covered a lot more than I thought we might. I got to talk about a lot of really great things. And
I think it's
nice to end on that it's okay to struggle note, because a lot of the advice comes with an it's okay if it's hard right now kind of caveat. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice to see, especially compared to kind of the things that sell better online. Where, you know, you don't need to struggle at all. Drink this shake and you'll lose 3 pounds and you can still eat all the pizza and all these kinds of messages that you get just in your face everywhere if you are interested in fitness or are interested in weight loss, any sort of topic like that. And it's really nice to hear things like, you know, my weight cut, it went great, but I had days where it was hard. I had days where it was difficult because I was hungry. It's nice to hear that in conjunction with the fact that the weight cut wasn't something that destroyed your life. Mm. You know, I asked a question earlier about push-ups on one of your lives, and, you know, it's like, that's the hardest part of the push-up. It's okay if you struggle at that point, you'll get better eventually if you keep practicing. And it gives you hope. It gives you this mindset of, okay, well, it might be hard right now, but I'll just keep doing it. Eventually it might not be hard anymore. And like, it's okay for things to be hard. It's okay for you to have a hard time with things. It's okay to struggle.
I don't even want to add anything on top of that, because I think you said it perfectly. You do not have to answer this if you don't want to, but you are incredibly inspiring and you're very articulate and well-spoken. And would you like to tell people where they might be able to follow you if you'd like? If not, you don't have to. And it's like, but if you'd like to tell them on Instagram or something, that would be great.
Absolutely. I can definitely give my Instagram handle. It's @birdwithhat. So a bird wearing a hat. this is kind of a preface for people. You can follow me if you like. You can message me if you like. I have no problem with any of that. But because I'm going through a PhD at the moment and I'm in a really, really intensive spot, I don't post very often.
Okay.
And if it is, it might not be fitness related. I am an artist on the side, so some of it might be art or comics, things like that. If you like it, great. If not, don't feel pressured to stay if it's not the content that you want. That's kind of just my preface.
So it's @birdwithhat.
Yes.
Perfect. Well, listen, I'm blown away. This it's only Monday and I know I'm going to have a great week just because you made my week. This was really a wonderful conversation. I feel very blessed that you're able to take the time to get on and speak with me, and I appreciate you so much. So really thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on. I think that you're going to get a lot of messages from people because this was a really wonderful conversation, and yeah, I think you helped a lot of people, and I'm just very grateful for you.
I mean, I'm the one that has a lot of gratitude for you and Susan and for the inner circle. It's been really exciting and really fun to get to talk to you. It was a great time. And again, thank you for what you do with the inner circle. Thank you for being a down-to-earth coach that doesn't make me eat only broccoli and make me do 2 hours of warm-up, because that's the way to burn calories.
Well, listen, thank you so much. Have a wonderful week, and I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Have a great week.
Bye, Gabriella.
Bye.
that wraps it up for this episode of the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Gabriella, thank you so much for coming on, and thank you to each and every one of you for listening. I hope you found it helpful. Again, if you'd like to join the Inner Circle, you can do that at www.sfinnercircle.com. Have a wonderful day. Talk to you soon.